Hello, and welcome to The Swim Brief. I'm Chris DeSantis. Here at The Swim Brief, we discuss things that come up in my coaching, my background in positive psychology, and conversations that I have with other coaches are often the inspiration for this. So this week, what I want to talk about a bit is my own approach to how I think about doping in sports. This is something that has bubbled to the top with the recent revelation that a large group of Chinese swimmers tested positive for a banned substance prior to the 2021 Olympics. And somehow this was all sort of kept hush-hush and no punishments were doled out. I want to reference the Chinese case only in so much as I think, you know, it's an example of something in the conversation around doping in sports, and it's something that's front of mind for a lot of people right now. I don't pretend to be an expert in doping. I'm not a crack scientist who can or a very good lawyer in terms of, you know, arguing one side of the case or another. I'm a coach, so I come at it from a coaching perspective. And how do I reckon with this concept as it comes into competitive athletics? That's sort of what I tend to focus on. And the way that I would summarize my approach is I have a head above water approach to doping. What do I mean by that? I mean, I tend to be realistic about what's going on, what I see is going on, what I think is likely, most likely, even in situations where I can't say for sure that I know what's going on, right? I trust my intuition on this stuff. And I think about it because at the end of the day, I think a lot of people get really discouraged. I saw Kyle Sockwell getting really discouraged about this whole story. And you know, I think having a realistically optimistic approach to looking at this is part of the key to keeping your spirits up and keeping your attitude in the right place. Because ultimately, at the end of the day, despite the fact that I think there's some really hairy stuff going on with regards to doping, I still feel good about a career where I help people do their best in sports. And so... how I arrive at that, I think, is worth discussing, because ultimately, at the end of the day, if you're making the choice to still compete, to still be involved in sports, you want to think about what you think about all of this. I don't suggest just sort of ignoring and going like, hey, I'm going to move on from this issue. And just not, I'll just try not to think about it. In general, I don't think it's a very good strategy to try not to think about something. And especially if you're listening to this at this point, it's got to bother you on some level, or you got to have some big emotions, some passion involved in this. And so maybe some of the stuff I'm about to say can help you. So I'm going to go over several points here that relate to how I think about doping in sports. And let me start, actually, even before I get into my points, let me just start with the real premise here is when I saw this news story break, I'm of the opinion that China is one of at least two countries that probably engages in state-sponsored doping. The other one, for those playing at home, is Russia, okay? And you can say, oh, what a biased American perspective on things. And you're entitled to your opinion. I think you're wrong, obviously. But that's where I start. I start with the opinion. Do I know that that's the case? Well, historically, there's quite a few tangible examples over the years that has been the case. But do I know that China is doing it right now specifically, or even in this instance in Tokyo, right, where obviously the doping authorities ultimately said, there's nothing here. No. But I act as if what I think is probably true is true. And I'd love to be proven wrong. You might ask, Chris, how could you be proven wrong? Well, I mean, one of the things that would put me, I don't know that I need to be proven wrong in so much as I need to think that these things are less than probable. And just a general opening of the culture, especially around sports and doping and testing and administration and systems and all of that, would probably convince me that China is not, more than likely not, doing this. In the same instance, Russia. But you have two very closed systems, and I think when you have these really, really closed off systems, and by the way, also very, very top-down driven systems, right? Totalitarian, authoritarian government top-down systems, it's really rife for this kind of abuse. And unfortunately, they have the resources to do this, because it's only gotten, and this is something that I've changed my opinion on over the years, it's only gotten sort of, in my opinion, less resource intensive to cheat with drugs in sports. And so I look at the story. Do I know that there's cheating going on? No, but I think it's more probable than not. And so when I see that, you know, there was no punishments doled out here, yeah, like a lot of people, I'm pretty upset. I'm upset because I don't think that's fair. I'm upset because I know that I'm going to watch an Olympics this summer. And, you know, I watched the World Championships last summer. It was a great, great, I almost want to put that in quotes. I probably should put it in quotes, results for China. And it really brings me to my first point. And you might think I'm crazy for doing this, but when I watch a meet, I kind of pretend that China and Russia are not there. And you're like, oh, how do you do that? I can't tell you exactly how I achieved that, but I'll give you an example of how this developed with me. I was reading an article on SwimSlam a few months back, and it was on some domestic results for David Popovich, right? And the article starts off, former world record holder David Popovich. And I'm like, in my mind, I go, what do you mean former world record holder? He just set the world record. Like, he's the world record holder. And I realized that, of course, there's a swimmer from China who has swum a faster 100 free than David Popovich. And in my mind, I just went, yeah, but that's not legit, and moved on. So, you know, I've sort of effectively set up my own mental filter. Does that mean that... that meets are super fair now, and because Chris DeSantis doesn't recognize these results, that they're going to go, well, actually, you're not getting the gold medal because Chris DeSantis doesn't recognize it? No, of course, they still do the medal ceremonies. There's no consolation for the fourth place finisher in these instances if they're losing to somebody who's doped and standing up there. But just for my own sanity, I filter through those results, and I tend to focus on people from other countries. Do I know that all those athletes are clean? No, more than likely some of them are not, by the way. More than likely some of them are not. But, and that's, I guess, a difference between the way I do math in a group setting versus on an individual setting, right? I can't know. That's part of my head above water approach. I can't know what's going on, but I can guess what I think is probable. And on a team-wide basis, when I look at China, I think it's more probable than not that the athletes are not clean. On an individual basis, Same with Russia. On an individual basis for athletes from other countries, I think more than likely not. But if you give me, you know, like the whole group, yes, I think some of them are using performance-enhancing drugs. I almost said doing performance-enhancing drugs, but for whatever reason, we say using, and otherwise you're doing drugs when you're doing drugs that are fun, I guess. So I have this filter for results. Here's the second thing, and this is where I'm probably going to start. People who, you know, have been with me this entire time, yeah, Chris, I totally agree with you entirely. If you've been with me this entire time, this is where I might lose some of you with the second heads up opinion. But I recognize the fact that doping, okay, competitive doping in sports affects very few athletes directly. What do I mean by that? Well, what I mean is, of course, there are indirect effects. We'll talk about that in a second. But in terms of some of the stuff we've been discussing recently, okay, like, let's say, like me, you're deleting these results, you're filtering out these results, right? And as I said, you know, this stuff, they don't factor in my opinion to the medals table. So, you know, somebody is getting a gold and somebody is sitting in fourth place that probably should have gotten a medal. That's one person. And we have to be honest about that, right? The vast majority of us are not coaching athletes that are directly affected by doping. We are not having our livelihood or the experience of, you know, our athletes, you know, whoever you're coaching to the LSC champs or your high school state meet or whatever. That stuff's not affected by doping, right? And I think it's just important to keep that perspective directly, as I'm going to keep qualifying it. But you guys are smart. You understand what I'm saying. We have to keep that perspective because it really is something that is, it's bad. It affects the competitive nature of stuff, but it's also marginal. And it's, especially as you get away from the bleeding edge, elite level, it's excessively marginal in terms of its day-to-day effect on what you are doing and how you're engaging in this sport. And I think I want to be honest about that because sometimes I think we have to make disingenuous arguments to get fired up about stuff, you know, like that this stuff is, you know, existential for everybody in the sport and therefore, like, we need to keep working to make things fair. No, I think we need to keep working to make things fairer. Absolutely. And I think we should try a lot harder than we're trying right now. But I also recognize that the effect of doping on me and what I do is really, really marginal. And in many cases, just not that significant. Now, let's talk about the indirect effects. Let's be honest about that piece of it, right? To the extent that people with their heads above water like me, okay, look at this and say, it's not fair. It is worth doing something about. It is worth investing some time and energy. But we also have to recognize that we are never going to eliminate doping. Like we need to take away perfection as a goal. That doesn't mean we shouldn't try to do a lot better than we're doing right now. But when I hear people say, like, our goal is doping-free sports, I go, well, that's just, I mean, I guess you can have it as a target and we'll get as close as we can get, but that's not a realistic goal in any shape or form, or as I see it, in any way an attainable goal. So we have to We have to, again, if you want to keep your head above water, if you want to be honest about what's going on here, because I think it's important to be honest with yourself, because it's, if you're not, your subconscious knows you're BSing it, right? So if you're not honest with yourself, if the thought process you have around something is not honest, it's very, very much designed to fail. So I think we have to be honest that that's not really a legitimate goal at this point, that it's not an attainable goal at this point. We're not going to have doping-free sports. We're not going to have doping-free sports. And so we're always, for, I plan on, for the extent of my career involved in sport, that this is going to be a reality of life, right? That I'm not going to be able to deny that this is happening, that I'm not going to be able to discount that this is happening. It's there. And I am basically powerless to stop it, right? On a grand scale. I can obviously, I can manage myself. There's things that I can do. I can make my stance very clear to athletes that I coach, and I do that. But I can't stop sport doping at the elite level on an individual level, right? I'm powerless against that. And therefore, I don't burn a lot of calories thinking about it, or really not thinking about it, but swirling around the same mental cul-de-sac, because I know that it's not productive, that it's not going to change the thing that is bothering me about doping in sports. Which brings me to my final point, and I think this is something that I see that's missing from a lot of the conversations, and it's, I'm going to, in discussing it, it's going to take me well beyond doping in itself, and it's going to be another critique of some of the other people I see talking about swimming out there as well. Nothing is going to change significantly about this until we change the incentive structure for sports. Okay, what do I mean by that? Well, sports is big business. It's big business for some people. Even the sport of swimming, there are some people who are making a lot of money on it, right? The Olympics makes a lot of money. Swimming is one of the biggest sports at the Olympics, if not the biggest sport at the Olympics, right? It's a big, big business. So understand globally that there are people that are making a lot of money. And those people do not share our interest in a fair and equitable sport. Okay? They like making money. They like making money off of sports. They love a situation where they can make a lot of money, and most of the people that are actually contributing to the product that makes a lot of money don't. Okay? And I don't want to get, I don't want to lose, you know, half my listenership to turn this into a political debate, but I don't think it's particularly politically controversial to say that there's some intense crony capitalism going on within the world of sports. And I think until we change that, you listen back to my podcast with John Little, I think until we change that, then we're not going to see a wholesale change in this incentive structure and the promotion of doping. Because the people with all the power and influence who are really making the decisions about what's going to happen around sports, they're insulated from the harm of doping. It doesn't affect them. It doesn't hurt them. It hurts, as I said, directly athletes at a very, very high level, and then indirectly the rest of us, just through this kind of demoralization factor of this is not fair. But the people who have the power to change this, they are very much insulated from having to care or deal with this. And until that changes, then I don't have a lot of hope that the circumstances around doping are going to change. And that might not strike you on its face as a very optimistic take here from Mr. Sports Positive Psychology, but it actually really, really helps me, because at the end of the day, I know what I can control. I can control myself. I can control how I represent myself in terms of fairness in sport. And I can be honest about what's going on. And despite all that, I can opt in to sports. I can say, look, there's still a lot in sports for me. Despite the fact that this is unfair, despite the fact that this is screwed up. People ask me all the time with regards to some of the stuff, again, a reference back to John Little, some of the perspective I have around sexual abuse in sports, they go like, how can you deal with all that darkness? Well, part of it is that I am realistic about what's actually going on. And at the same time, I say to myself, but I still think sports are awesome. I still think swimming is the greatest sport in the world, despite the fact that there are people competing in it who, and let's be realistic about this last point, I just thought of this as I was saying it. I think, you know, one of the realities of state-sponsored doping, and we know this from all the revelations around East German doping, is probably these athletes aren't opting in to this. So they're having potential really big health risks taken for them. Again, by people that are insulated from the problem, insulated from the harm, right? They're not injecting themselves with performance-enhancing drugs that have potential harmful health effects. They're just profiting off of athletes doing this. So I don't get mad at athletes that I see in what I think are state-sponsored doping systems, because I don't think that they, I honestly feel bad for them. I really do. And I said this take me afield from doping, but when I look at some of the conversation, again, Kyle Sockwell is out there. He's insanely popular within swimming. I always have to qualify that because, you know, we have a different scale for things being popular inside the sport of swimming. But, like, I know way more people listen to him than listen to this podcast, for sure. He's insanely more entertaining than this podcast, hands down. And I applaud him for his genuine love for the sport of swimming. I think he's really passionate fan of the sport, and we could use a lot more like him. Okay, so that's my qualifier. That's my wind-up to a criticism. And really, it's just a disagreement. I see him pumping endlessly, you know, we got to get swimming to be a more popular sport, a better spectator sport, get more people interested, like, get swimming more into this money funnel model. But I can tell you, I look at it and I just say, well, that will definitely make some people rich. Probably most of them won't be swim coaches. It certainly might mean that Kyle can make a living talking about swimming, because I would guess that that's exceedingly hard right now. And one of the reasons he's sustaining it is because he's young and, you know, as somebody who was involved with a sports swimming media venture when I was 25, 26, it was a heck of a lot easier in my mid-20s to just pour energy into that than it is now, 40 years old with two kids. now I can't envision myself doing anything like that, right? But like, I think he's at a stage of his life where he's doing it. And, but I don't necessarily agree that swimming needs to become a more entertaining sport or fit more into the model of the big money sports in the United States. I don't want swimming to become like basketball. I don't want swimming to become like football. I look at football, okay, as a sport. I have zero interest in college football. And like, again, I probably just alienated because, you know, most of my listeners, I got to imagine I got a lot of listeners that love college football. So maybe I'm about to ruin college football for you, but I just look at it and I go, they've completely lost the thread in two respects. One is it's just not really, and you can't convince me that the majority of those athletes are actually getting a student athlete experience. Okay. The schools have pushed harder and harder into like a semi-pro, sort of a pro farm league level. So they're just trying to like, you know, check off the NCAA's cursory boxes for education and put all the time and energy into being good at sports. And I don't want that for swimming. I think swimming still in a lot of places, and I'm seeing some of this change, I don't like it, but I think swimming still in a lot of places is a sport that is actually for student athletes, actually has student athletes, actually has people that are going to school and interested in studying something and pursuing an education. And when they leave, they got more or less the student experience of any other student going to that university. And I personally don't want to change that. And honestly, I think the college sports system, I know there's a lot going around with NIL and more money coming into this sort of professional farm league. But like, I look at a situation where I think from all accounts, Nick Saban was an incredible coach. Lots of great quotes. But I don't think it's, you can't convince me that it's in any way reasonably fair that he was making $10 million a year to coach that team. And the majority of his athletes got some, you know, got some chump change and a scholarship for an education that they weren't really getting. That's how I look at it. So I don't want us to become more like college football, because I think college football is a pretty corrupt situation. And I like that swimming is not that way. And I think that if that's the direction that we want to go in, then we're going to find ourselves looking at a problem like this one around doping, and it's going to be a lot worse. Because again, the people that will be making money off of swimming becoming a big money sport are not going to be the athletes. It's not going to be the coaches. It's going to be some other people that are harvesting a majority of that income. And maybe Kyle will make a living. Maybe my friends that are coaching and swimming will make a little bit more. But like, we'll still be fighting for a pittance of what's ultimately involved. And I just, again, take this as a political argument for what it's worth. I'm done apologizing for it. I'm just not interested in that. Swim meets should be shorter though. Anyway, that's the podcast for today. I hope you guys all enjoyed listening. I meant to record one with Arthur Albero this week, and we just had some scheduling conflicts, and now he's got to go to an Olympic qualification meet, so it's going to be a couple weeks till we get on that one, but I have a really exciting podcast brewing with Arthur. I had a really good time talking to him in the lead-up to doing it, so I think look forward to that in the future. Look forward to maybe some other old faces in and around the Swim Brief universe that you've been missing coming back. That's my other tease for future podcasts. Thank you, everybody, for listening. Swimbriefpodcast@gmail.com if you want to reach out to me. ChristyCoach.com, Instagram, Christy_coach. You can see clips of this podcast. You can always get an update via my stories when a new podcast comes out. So look for that there, and I'll see you guys all soon.